Hi, Carly.
Hi there. This is Kyle.
Hi.
This is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. Thanks for being patient while I had you in the waiting room. I just finished up my lunch. I'm going to go let my my dog out of the house real quick. She always likes to go in and out when we're starting a meeting. I'll be back in a moment. I've disabled the waiting room, so any other members that are joining will just pop right in, so you'll see them as they join. And I should be back here in just a minute or two.
Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Oh, you can. Okay, cool. Oh, maybe ours is turned down. That's why we can't hear. Okay. Say something now.
Yeah? Can you hear?
Can't hear. I think I'll hit the mute.
Hey.
Hey, Mike.
How's it going?
Good.
Boy, that computer makes you look really cool.
No, that God did that.
I look like an old man online.
No,
hey.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, real good, Kyle.
I was just letting the others know that I had to run out and let my my dog out. Now she's laying on the floor next to me. She always decides the best time to need to go in and out is right as I'm starting a meeting. So.
Yeah, that trained well.
Yeah. Well, hey, I just wanted to say thanks again, Mike, for reaching out. Perfect timing to ask me to get the reminder out for this. I had it, you know, in my notes after your last meeting, that, and then the email you sent me about scheduling it, and things have been real busy with,
Kyle, whatever his name is, the head of...
Oh. Hi there. Sounds like I can hear a couple folks wondering who I am. This is Kyle Campbell from Board Support Section with Fish and Game. I can change my name on the screen here, so for those of you that haven't met me yet, And before Mike calls this meeting to order, I just wanted to introduce myself again to those of you on the call. Your meeting back in December or November was actually one of my very first advisory committee meetings. So I've learned a few things since then, a little bit better at running the show now. And I'm happy to help in any way I can if there's materials you need to put out. I also want to remind folks that are maybe a little newer to the Zoom process, that it's really helpful when you're not speaking that you press the mute button that's located at the bottom of your screen. Otherwise, it can be pretty hard for other members who are speaking to speak over the background sounds. But looking at you, Mike Turner, I can hear a lot of sound coming from your computer.
What do I do?
There you go. Perfect. Yep, that's it. So, and if we have any members who are going to be joining us by phone today, a good reminder just for kind of helping these meetings run smoothly. So this goes for you, Mike, or Mike Turner, or for anyone else who's kind of running the meeting or working through things. If you've got phone participants with a lot of background noise bleeding over, you can ask them to mute themselves by pressing *6 on their phone. It looks like right now everyone on the call is on a computer, so that's not as much an issue. You can just toggle that mute button on and off on your computer, and that'll be really helpful for just keeping background noise to a minimum to help the meeting go smoothly. But with that said, I'll turn things over to you, Mike. It's 10 o'clock.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. So, you know, we got a little agenda here. We're going to try to get some things done. Basically, I guess we'd like to start off with a fisheries update, if that's possible. Christy, if you can do that, or if you direct somebody, we'd just like to kind of get a little overview of what we're going on. One of the big concerns that I understand from the residents is the net size restrictions in the Mentumina area. I guess that's one of the things. If you want to kind of introduce a little bit of background, that'd be great. Thanks.
Mike, before I turn things over to Christy, I just want to, just as a point of order for kind of the, we tend to try and follow the Roberts Rules of Order with these advisory committee meetings. And so I sent out that agenda. I'm happy to kind of draft those boilerplate agendas like I did for this meeting. But it does kind of need to start with the chair calling the meeting to order at a given time, and then calling the roll of members present, and making sure that all of the advisory committee members, there are 5 current members on your advisory committee, and you need a minimum of 3 present for a quorum. It looks like we've got it, but it still needs to be really clearly communicated for the record who's present, and then also ask guests and staff to introduce themselves. Just kind of work through the sequence of agenda items.
No problem. Thanks for the reminder. I kind of ran new at this myself, so I'd like to welcome everybody here. We're going to kind of go over some stuff. I'd like to call the meeting to order at whatever time it is, 13:02. If everybody would like to just introduce themselves really quick for a roll call, that'd be good. My name is Michael Goh. I guess I've been kind of put here. So, Willen Lee, of course, and if people can just go around and introduce themselves, that'd be great. Well, I don't know, everyone's screen's probably a little bit different, but go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, I'm Nate Turner from the Kantishna and the Nowitna River areas, and I believe I'm the current vice chair of the board or the committee. I'm not sure. Could you hear me?
Oh, yeah, you sound good. Yep.
Okay.
I'm Bruce Wilson, and I'm a member of the board. Hear me?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Thanks, Bruce.
Okay.
Hi, Kari.
Kari, you have to unmute.
It's the little buttons on the top, right?
So this is Kyle Campbell again from Board Support Section. And Kari, I noticed when you first joined on, it seems like you're having some audio issues. Like, we can hear you, but really, really faintly. If you, next to the mute button on your screen, there should be like a little carrot, like a little arrow. And that'll, if you click on that, there'll be an option for audio settings. And if you click on the Zoom audio settings, it should bring up a window where it gives you, it lets you kind of select which speaker and which microphone your computer or Zoom is grabbing. And so if there are multiple options, I'm not sure what microphone you have plugged into yours, but we really aren't able to hear you very well, unfortunately. And if we can't troubleshoot it that way, the other option that has worked well in the past, if you were to leave the meeting and rejoin, when you first join, it asks you how you want to connect your audio settings. Typically, it's like use your computer's audio. It also gives you the option to, like, use your phone, like a telephone, as your audio while using your computer for video. So that's an option if we're not able to get your sound figured out right now.
Oh, yeah, you're pretty faint, but I can hear you.
Okay.
Do you know whether the microphone you're talking into is built into your computer, or do you have something plugged in?
It's a computer microphone.
It sounds like there's something physically over the microphone. It's muffled. Like we can't hear.
Sorry, I don't have anything over the microphone.
That significantly changed things. Whatever you just did, we can hear you clearer now.
Okay. I didn't
do anything. Oh, well, maybe it was just when you leaned in really close like this, we could hear you. No, unfortunately, we're having a hard time. Kari, is there a phone number that I could call a phone and connect you to the meeting by phone? That might be a good backup option.
You're coming through now, Kari.
Well, that's good.
Oh.
I can send you... Is this working?
We're good. Oh, yeah, something changed. It's fixed now.
We're good. Okay.
Great.
All right. Well, I didn't know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mike, I guess I see Mike Turner on, if he can introduce himself, I guess, real quick.
Well, you got to help me.
Okay. You're good.
I'm a stranger on this thing, so you got to bear with me. I'm Mike Turner, and I'm from the Kantishna River. I'm here 30-plus years, trapper, old trapper, I guess. And I fished Kantishna for almost all the 30 years and done Tetris for about 15 years down here. And now I'm just sitting here on the computer.
All right, thanks, Mike. And I see, is it Mary down there?
Mike, I didn't quite catch it. Is Tom Green on the call currently?
I'm not sure. I don't recognize the numbers offhand. There's three phone numbers at the bottom. If 860 can introduce yourself, that'd be great. Thanks. Last three digits are 860.
Oh, no, Kari, it seems like the audio issue is coming back up. We're not hearing you again.
Oh, you're super faint, Kari.
Kari, I'm going to go ahead and put my phone number in the chat if you want to give me a call, and we can maybe troubleshoot this without taking up time for everyone else.
All right, and I see Mary's on, Mary Bishop. Could you say hi? I don't know if your husband's with you or not.
I thought I already had. Yes, Dick and I are here as visitors. Hello, oh, all of them.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, thank you for joining me. Yeah, we didn't hear that. And then I see three numbers on the bottom. I don't recognize them. The last three digits is 860. If you can introduce yourself, please. All right. I don't hear anything from 860. The next number one I see, the last three numbers are 265.
That's probably me, Mike. That's, I'm Ray.
Oh, hey, Ray. Oh, cool. I'm glad you can join.
Yeah, that's Karen's number. I'm in town. I'm listening. I'm just listening on Karen's phone.
Oh, shucks. Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for joining, Ray. And then I see another number. Last three digits are 265.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi, my name is Sam Decker. I'm with Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The last three digits of my phone number are 265. I'm with the Commercial Fisheries Division. I think there's also a couple of other fish and gamers listening in. So we're just here to, be available to answer any questions. And if Kari can hear me, I'd like to say hi. We were friends when she lived in Fairbanks when our children were young together. So I hope everything's going well.
Oh, thank cool. You. Yeah, cool. Thanks for joining. And I see, two other non-board members, non-fish and game people. One is, last three is 101.
Yeah, this is me, Mark Miller.
Oh, hey, Mark. All right. Thanks for joining, Mark. And then I see Beverly's on. If you can introduce yourself, Beverly, real quick.
Yep. Just up here.
Yeah, hi. I'm Mark's wife.
All right. Okay, thank you. And what's the last three digits on your number, please?
Computer.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, I guess if you guys don't mind introducing yourselves, I see your name on there. Christy, I guess if you guys can go through and Tony, if you guys can say hi real quick, and Shane and Gina.
Sure. I'm Christy Gleason. I'm with the Division of Commercial Fisheries here in the Fairbanks Fish and Game Office. And while I work for Commercial Fisheries, I'm the fall season manager on the Yukon. And so I assess and I manage the subsistence, personal use, and commercial fishing. And I also... But before I was the fall season manager, I was the assistant manager for 7 years. And part of that responsibility, I was in charge of the subsistence fishing permits for our area. So I've helped many of you guys get fishing permits and get them turned in at the end of the year. So I recognize names and faces here on the call.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah, thanks for joining, Christy.
I'll go. Hi, my name is Dina Jout, and apologies, I don't have a camera up and running today due to some computer issues. But similarly to Christy, I also work for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Division of Commercial Fisheries. I'm the summer season manager, and I was also the summer season assistant manager for a few years prior to taking the manager position. So the summer season manages Chinook salmon and summer chum runs within the Yukon River drainage. And I used to do the post-season subsistence salmon harvest survey and also work with harvest and information from the surveys and subsistence salmon permits.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Dina. And Shane?
Hey, everyone. I work under Christy Gleason. I'm the assistant manager for fall season.
All right. Thanks for joining. And Tony?
Hello, everybody. I'm Tony Hollis. I'm with Wildlife Conservation. I'm the area biologist for the area. And nice to see everybody.
All right. Yeah, thanks for joining, Tony.
No problem.
Mr. Griska?
Hi there. I'm Andy Griska, and I am the, for Sport Fish Division of Fish and Game, I am the area manager for the Channel on Drainage.
All right, cool. All right, well, we got some big guns joining us here. So, all right, well, if you don't mind, Christy, kind of talking a little bit about the fisheries update for the area, and we can kind of jump through the meeting, if that's all right, for next portion of the meeting.
I don't know if you guys already did this, but you may want to touch base with Kyle and approve. I don't know if you have to approve the agenda first after doing the introduction of guests, but he may want to chime in here real quick. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. You want to hear anything right. I don't have anything in front of me. I'm just kind of winging it. So.
Okay.
Right away, Kyle. So keep us in line there.
Yeah, thank you, Christy. And sorry, we just got Kari connected by phone and video, so that's why you might see Kari on there twice. And I was trying to keep notes here on the side, so if I missed anybody's introductions, I apologize. It does sound like I didn't quite catch if we did have Tom Green on the call or not, but we do have four members present. That is a quorum. And I can even share the, real quick, let me just, for anyone who didn't already access all the materials that were sent out to folks, I'm going to put it, because it looks like just about everyone in this meeting is, on a computer. And if you're on the phone, all of the meeting materials, are also, they were sent out by email, and they're also posted to that online public notice, which I'm dropping the link to in the chat. This is where the recording of the meeting will go afterwards, as well as once the minutes are generated by the AC officers, and that's where the minutes will go as well. So I would be happy, though, to pull up off of that notice the just pull up the agenda.
I got the agenda here, Kyle. Thanks.
Oh, okay. Great. I'll let you kind of take it away.
All right. So, Section 5, Chair's comments. I'm just really glad you guys are able to kind of join. It's kind of interesting time to join us through Zoom, but I think we can get a lot of information across and share information and move forward for the best of everybody that's that's living, you know, kind of in the area and for people's concerns. I'm grateful that, you know, Nate, even though he wasn't there, he was asked to step up and he jumped right in there. So I feel pretty confident we can get things done. We're kind of all learning this thing. I'm horrible with the Zoom. So I apologize if things aren't, super up to par. You can yell at me later, but we'll get through this. Does anybody, moving on to, number six, is there any comments or concerns from the public? All right. I don't hear anything. So moving along to number seven, is there any comments or concerns from any of the AC members? Man, quiet group today. All right. So I guess number eight, we have to approve the agenda. Did you guys all get a chance to look at our agenda that we got going on? Basically, I guess the agenda is somebody would like to, wait a second here, and then everybody votes. That works, Kyle?
Sure. So different ACs kind of can run things a little bit differently depending on the individual flair or style. One of the most efficient ways I've seen AC chairs kind of work through following Robert's Rules of Order for something like an approval of the agenda, you could ask for, I think that's something, I have to go back and look at the Robert's Rules notes, but that's something the chair doesn't need a motion for, but you can ask for approval by unanimous consent and give a moment for any members on the call to say, oh, actually I have something I want to add or change. And if nobody voices up when you ask for unanimous consent, that's how I've seen some AC chairs move pretty quickly. Other ACs really like to, make sure everything has a motion and a second, and then either a roll call style vote or asking for yeas and nays to be voiced. But the unanimous consent is a pretty handy tool. They ask for approval of the agenda by unanimous consent. And
all right. That sounds good. Thanks, Kyle, for kind of coaching us through this. We'll get through this. So we're not going to get into part of the meeting yet. But anyway, this is great. So I guess I just assume that the unanimous consent and moving forward for approval of the agenda. And I guess I do need somebody to kind of approve the previous minutes from December 9th last year. Would anybody take a look at that? Or do you have any questions? Do we need to go through that? Oh, there we go. Hey, thank you. Oh, someone's real fancy. Is that you, Kyle, making all the magic happen? Oh, all right.
Yes, it is. It just takes me a moment to find the mute button when I start sharing my screen. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, thanks for doing that. That's great. Yeah, I'm just kind of reading down the same thing. So I guess we're just going to assume that's going to be a generally approval of the minutes that Kari did a great job last time. So thanks again, Kari. And so I guess moving on to number 10, staff reports from Christy and Dina. If you guys could share with us kind of a little bit of the area, so we got a little bit of a familiarization of what's going on. Thanks.
Sure. I think you're doing a good job with this meeting. So again, I'm Christy Gleason. I'm the Yukon River Fall Season Manager. I'm based here in the Fairbanks office. And I just want to say to the safety, thanks for letting us come and talk about fisheries today. I know it's important for people that live in Lake Minchemina and then also people that live along the Kantishna River drainage and fish for salmon. I've heard your concerns about mesh flies, especially the last 2 years during these poor salmon runs. And Dean and I just want to let your AC know that we hear you and we're here to talk to you today about what it's like fishing in the area of Lake Minchemina and then the Kantishna River, and also letting you know that we're trying our best to provide fishing opportunity within our existing regulations. So that's why we're here to talk to you today. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dina, because she'll give you an update on how the Chinook salmon run and how the summer chum run is doing. And then she'll turn it back over to me, and I'll talk about how the fall chum and the coho are doing. And then I'll kind of talk to you about what the salmon runs are looking like and, like, why we're in a decline and what the salmon management has been like. And then we'd love to hear from you guys after that about give us information about how fishing is going in your area, what kind of fishing gear you use, and have a conversation and see how we can better help you.
Yeah, thanks for that, Christy. So this is Dina John with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I'm the summer season manager. I'll just give just a brief overview of the 2021 season. I don't know if anyone's had a chance to look at the summer season summary. I don't know if that was an attachment or not. Oh, it was. Oh, good. Yeah, so if you've had a chance to look at this, it is a 15-page document. It goes through our management from last season. It kind of just talks a little bit about what the summer season was. If you can scroll down, in 2021, we had a Chinook salmon outlook for a run of 102,000 to 189,000 fish, which is smaller than the run in 2020. And despite very restricted fishing in those recent years, we haven't been meeting the escapement goal up to the U.S.-Canada border. So with a expected smaller run in 2021, we started the season closed for Chinook salmon, for salmon fishing. So our management actions were to close the season starting June 2nd in District 1 in the coastal district, and then walk those closures upriver paralleling the salmon migration speed. And this was also informed by our summer chum salmon runs. It was expected that the 2021 summer chum salmon run would be below average. Our outlook was for a run of 1.2 million. However, we've had a lot of uncertainty in that run due to the poor performance of age four fish in the year before. What we ended up getting in 2021 was a summer chum salmon run of 160,000 fish, which was the lowest run ever counted for summer chum salmon since we've had our projects operating, perhaps the lowest run ever of summer chum salmon. Those of you that are have been fishing, you know, in Alaska or throughout the state your whole lives may recognize that as being one of the worst summer chum salmon runs ever. For reference, our drainage-wide goal for summer chum salmon is between 500,000 to 1.2 million. So to get a run of only 160,000, that put us well below the drainage-wide escapement goal. And so with the Chinook salmon run being low, not expected to meet the border passage, not expected to meet escapement goals and the other systems that we monitor, and the summer chum salmon run being so far below the drainage-wide escapement goal, we kept subsistence fishing closed through the entire summer season. And so that meant also subsistence fishing was closed. There was no commercial fishing. There was no sport fishing. Everything was closed for the entire summer season. I guess, Kyle, if you've got the summer season summary up, if you could scroll through to page 7, table 2, that goes through the escapement goals for the project. Well, we've all got a handy computer screen going. And so these show the escapement goals and preliminary passage estimates. Oh, scroll back up a little bit. For Chinook, it was table 2. For Chinook salmon in 2021. And so that just shows you that our 2021 escapements were below the current goals, which are those numbers in the first column, and then also below the historic averages. So we didn't meet the goals in any of the systems that we had goals or had counts in last year. The passage up at the Eagle Sonar site near the U.S.-Canada border was only around 31,000 fish, which is below the goal of 42,000. We did see a pretty good number of Chinook salmon at the pilot station sonar. However, the last few years, we've had a lot of concerns with a difference between estimates, where we are perhaps seeing more Chinook salmon lower in the river and then not seeing them make it up to their escapement goals. And there's a lot of theories about why this may be. Maybe the sonar projects are off in their counts, and maybe the Chinook salmon are dying on their way on route mortality. And so we've got some projects planned coming up to help look at en route mortality and what might be causing that. There's different projects planned to kick off next year that are going to be looking at body condition, looking at cyanine levels, looking at lipid levels in Chinook salmon, looking at disease status of fish, looking at ichthyophonus in particular. We're planning to start a monitoring program for ichthyophonus that will incorporate sites in the lower Yukon, middle Yukon, and upper Yukon to look at presence and prevalence and severity of ichthyophonus infections, and hopefully help try to figure out if ichthyophonus is causing these Chinook salmon to die before they make it up to the streams where they're going to spawn. If you can scroll down to table 3, I guess the summer chum passage. And so table 3, this just walks back through the summer chum salmon numbers and how low they were last year. As you can see, our historical median drainage-wide run size for summer chum salmon is 1.6 million. And in 2021, our escapement was 150,000, so like one-tenth of our historic median and well below the drainage-wide escapement goal. Our counts at Ambic Sonar were well below the goal for that project, and counts were lower than the goals, or lower than the medians in the projects that were monitored last year. And so that's what happened in 2021. Fishing was closed for salmon. We did keep non-salmon harvest opportunity open with 4-inch or smaller mesh throughout the Yukon River drainage. So folks were hopefully able to go out and get non-salmon species, including small whitefish, large whitefish, pike, sheafish, et cetera. They could use 4-inch or smaller mesh, and then also non-salmon gear, hook and line, that sort of thing. Harvest of non-salmon species was pretty low last year. So despite that kind of being the only opportunity available, a lot of fishermen don't have non-salmon gear. They're not necessarily used to relying on non-salmon harvest, and there's just a lot of a lot less fishing activity last year from what we saw. So it wasn't that we cut off salmon fishing and then saw a huge increase in non-salmon harvest. It was just a lot of people just ended up not being able to really fish at all last year due to the salmon closures. Looking forward towards next year, we don't have our official forecast for Chinook salmon yet. Based on the Bering Sea Juvenile Trawl Survey, it looks like the Chinook salmon run coming in this year may be lower than last year, so we'll be very cautiously looking at our Chinook salmon runs. And the summer salmon forecast is for a run of 330,000, and that's got a really large range around it, between 162,000 to 542,000 fish, just because we've got a lot of uncertainty about summer chum salmon and what, you know, what the age classes are going to look like when they come back this year. But essentially, unless they come back at the very, very high upper end of that outlook, we will likely not have a summer chum salmon run that's large enough to meet the drainage wide escapement goal. We'll be having additional meetings coming up this spring, you know, more AC meetings. We'll be having meetings of the Yukon River Panel, the YIRFA preseason meeting, where we'll be talking about, you know, our forecasts and our outlooks for this year, just kind of with the expectation that going into 2022 that it's going to be another exceptionally difficult year for fishermen along the river with having more low salmon runs. If you have suggestions for the Alaska Board of Fisheries, proposals are still being accepted. You can still get those drafted and get those turned in. There's also a Board of Fishery Hatchery meeting that takes place on March 23rd. The Yearfish for Preseason meeting is March 24th in Anchorage. And the Yukon River Panel Spring meeting will be the week of April 4th. And so there's a lot of meetings coming on if you coming up in the spring if you want to weigh in further. And with that, I'll this is a really brief overview of summer information. I'll turn it over to Christy for fall season, and then unless you guys got pressing summer season questions right now, I can address those, or you can move on to Christy and then ask us about salmon in general after Christy's report.
And Mike, what would you like to do? Would you like to open it up for questions for Dina, or do you want us to continue on with Chum and Coho Salmon's report?
Yeah, I guess it's a good idea to pause and see if anybody has any questions for Dina as we go along. We're just getting lots of information. It's all good information, but you know, somebody wants to speak up, let's give a few minutes. Otherwise, we'll just have you go ahead, Christy. Thank you.
Hey, Mike, as a point of order for the meeting, this is Nate.
Oh, yeah, sure. What's up?
Reading through the minutes from the last meeting, which I missed, I noted there I was nominated for vice chair. I think technically I have to accept that nomination, so I just wanted to do so now.
All right. Thanks, Nate. All right, thanks for being patient, Christy. You want to take it away?
Sure. Okay. Okay. Yeah, thanks, Kyle, for sharing that on the screen. Every year at the end of the season, we produce the season summaries, and they're a helpful reference if you have questions about what our outlook was for the season, what our management strategy was, and then how the run ended up developing in season, and then what management actions we took. It also has tables in there that shows the subsistence harvest, the escapement, and if we commercial fish, we have that information in there as well. It also shows you, you know, how the run came in. We have graphs on there that show you how many pulses of chum salmon or coho that we had if you want to learn more information. But what I'll do right now is just give you an overview of what we're seeing kind of at a larger geographical area in the North Pacific Ocean for chum salmon the last 2 years, and then I'll bring that down to what we're seeing in the Yukon, and then talk about our fisheries management, and then I'll end with how that applies to Lake Minchumina, and then go from there for a discussion. So for the last 2 years, we've seen chum salmon very low across the state of Alaska and across the North Pacific. And so that includes Russia, Japan, Canada. We're all seeing these low chum salmon runs. And the Yukon is experiencing the worst of these chum salmon runs for some reason. Worse than Norton Sound, worse than Kuskokwim, and we're also seeing a lower run of coho salmon the last 2 years. And so we've had these record low runs, and it's been very difficult for all fishermen on the Yukon River because we've had subsistence fishing closed, and all other fishing has been closed for fall season. And so what's interesting about this crash is it was unexpected, and we're also seeing a crash in the two salmon species, the chum and the coho, that tend to do really well. Chum have been doing pretty well on the Yukon for about 20 years, and so it seems like about once every 20 years we go through a couple low years, and they've always been able to bounce back. The coho salmon tend to do pretty well, but with this crash, what we're seeing is salmon that spend different amounts of time in the ocean and in freshwater are both experiencing the crash. So chum salmon, they go out to the ocean shortly after hatching, and they spend most of their life in the ocean before they come back as adults. Coho salmon, they spend usually a couple years in freshwater, and then they go out to the ocean for a year, and then they come back to the river as adults. And we're also seeing this last year, we saw really small body sizes of both salmon species returning to the Yukon, so that was concerning for us as well. What's interesting about the crash the last 2 years is the parent years for these salmon performed really well, and meaning that we got enough salmon to the escapement grounds, and actually the parent years were some of the largest run sizes we've seen for chum salmon and for coho salmon too. And so what we saw in 2021 was worse than 2020 for the Yukon River fall chum and coho runs. This year we saw about 95,000 fall chum, and this compares to an odd year average run of 1.1 million chum. And so no escapement goals were met. And for some perspective, our drainage-wide escapement goal for fall chum is 300,000 to 600,000 fish. And so according to our management plan, when we fall below this level of 300,000 fall chum salmon, we're mandated to close all salmon fishing for subsistence, sport fishing, personal use, and commercial. The coho salmon this year came in about 45,000. They were a little bit late, and an average run for them is 235,000. And like I mentioned, so we had all salmon fishing closed for subsistence, personal use, sport, and commercial. And this was mandated by that 300,000 fish threshold. And this was a tremendous hardship on fishermen because the Yukon River drainage has over 55 communities either relying on non-salmon or salmon, and we had everything closed down. And the only gear types that people could use during these salmon closures include gill nets with 4-inch or smaller mesh size, and other legal non-salmon gear. We have a whole list of gear that people are allowed to use. And it doesn't get much better looking forward to 2022. We don't really know what to expect at this point, but we think that based on the performance of the last 2 years, it's likely that we're going to be experiencing low salmon runs again, and we're going to be well below our escapement goals, and salmon fishing will be closed. And so what this means for Lake Minchumina is, and
people in the Kantish and River drainage is normally in our salmon season, you're open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, with 7.5-inch or smaller mesh gill nets for salmon and fish reel. And there's a subsistence salmon fishing permit required for your area if you're using salmon gear, like gill nets larger than 4-inch mesh and fish reels. And so what this season's going to look like this coming year is similar to the last 2 years, where salmon fishing's probably going to be closed, and we're going to just allow the 4-inch or smaller mesh gill nets and the non-salmon gear. And these are management strategies that were mandated in regulation, and it applies to everyone living on the Yukon River drainage. It's not just your area. And so that's why we're here talking to you today. And I guess with that, I can take some questions, and then we can hear from you guys and hear about how you fish, what you would like to see, if we can do any improvements. And I'll leave it at that for now.
All right, thanks, Christy. I appreciate obviously you guys spend a lot of time in trying to manage a species that's pretty elusive. It's probably better here from somebody else other than me, but I got kind of a general idea of we just had somebody locally can talk a little bit about the fishing experience and what they've seen and how many fish. That would be tremendously helpful as well at this point.
This is Julie. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound
good.
You were talking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Julie.
Okay, my sister and I have been fishing Lake Minchimina for most of our lives, and I've always used the 5-inch stretch. If that's not legal, we'll have to buy new equipment, which we can do. We did not catch any salmon at all last summer, and most years we will catch between 2 and 4 king salmon in a good year, and maybe half a dozen chum. Otherwise, we're mostly just getting whitefish and other local fish.
Thanks for your input, Julie. And I guess, Mike, thanks for being patient. Yeah, could you say something, please?
Oh.
I think you've got it.
Okay.
You're good.
You hear me, Mike?
Yes, sir. You sound like Mike.
Okay. I'm fumbling here. Oh, well, I've had some concerns about the Kantishna River. Last year was really a difficult year because of Mobile Geyser. We had extra silt coming down to run. It was really bad. Kantishna is a historically dirty river. It was silt coming out of the mine, but it was really bad. And I think it affected a lot of the fishing. I didn't do any. But what I was really concerned about was at the end of the season, or toward the end, we were even shut off from losing gill nets, even a little bit of 4-inch or 2-inch section, or 3-inch stretch. And Minchimina was too. Well, Minchimina is not a great producer of salmon, and strictly sure run through there. Nobody's really got onto the path with the salmon, but there's a lot of feeder streams coming into there, but most have salmon. I don't know if anybody fishes below me, but I haven't been down a river in 10 years, so I don't know. There's any other competition. Besides, I don't know. The only thing to be would be me, them, and then the folks going motor out pipe, I believe. I've never heard them. That's all I can think of now. Oh, I was wondering about the Tokai River. I didn't hear of any survey being done on there. I don't think he was able to. But that's the main feeder for the Tambishna River. Unless I'm mistaken. I haven't used the fifth wheel in 10 years across our area due to erosion. So what I had done was with nets and very little of that. Because we haven't got any dogs anymore and I don't need to feed. That's it.
You need martin bait.
Huh?
You need martin bait.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. Does anybody else have some comments they'd like to add in about local fishing areas that they've experienced or they know of?
I can just give a little bit of incidental information. It's not in 20C, but it's in 21B on the Nowitna River. There's some small salmon runs primarily in the Tippner River, and their numbers have been down the last couple of years as well. But it just confirms what the data is showing already.
Yeah, thanks, Nate.
Mike, this is Dick Bishop. I was just wondering, how are you? Mickey or Julie brought up a good point about gear and what's been used historically, and I wonder how people can deal with that in terms of regulations that are on the books. Because traditionally, the mesh size hasn't been a problem at the lake. As I recall from past experience and knowing what people generally do there. So, that's kind of been a potentially nagging problem for a long time. I think it should be addressed by the department to point out or to acknowledge that, that regulation, the 4-inch limitations may be irrelevant in terms of practical matters at Lake Minishumina. Thanks.
I think Dickie did it eloquently summed up. I think what was in the back of my mind, but I think it's better to definitely better to have somebody else talk about their experiences and I think that's one of the main points. Thanks for meeting up with us, Christy, and I it's good hearing all this stuff. To kind of hang on with Kyle's little agenda, I guess. Is there any other public comment that we would like to talk about before we move on to the next Section 12 old business? Oh, yeah, go ahead, Nate.
Yes, hi. Christy, thank you for your overview of current status and all that and what's believed to be going on. I noticed you nodding your head and taking notes on to several of the comments that members were making. Is there anything you'd like to share in response to some of the questions that were put out?
Yeah, I'm taking notes on what you're saying. I'm interested, Dina's interested in hearing what gillnet mesh size you guys use. And so that was helpful to know that, you have the 5-inch gillnet, you don't have a 4-inch gillnet, so that regulation does cause a tremendous hardship on you because you can't even fish for non-salmon right now unless you go buy new gear. Yeah, I caught some of Mike Turner's concerns. On my end, it was a little bit broken. I guess it would be helpful for me if he restated or someone could summarize like what he said in the beginning. He had a couple concerns about the Tantishna River in recent years of what he's seen, but it kept cutting out for me.
So, yeah, Mike, you might not get this very much, but could you, do you have a chance to respond? Can you try to re-talk to that? Your mic was a little broke up too when I was listening. It might be because you're, pretty far away. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time hearing Joe, so I didn't catch what she asked.
she wanted to kind of, you know, if you can just kind of summarize, your report on the Kantishna, area, because it was a little broke up.
Like I say, I hadn't fished in the last couple of years, but one thing I think would have affected the runs of the Kantishna would have been that Mulder Glacier silt coming out. I was so happy that I think it really confused them. We do see a lot of difference in travel times coming up the river when the river goes high. The fish are extra day later, maybe 2 days later. When it drops down, then they come right along. We have another thing that happens is the chums seem to run onto East Bank, right where I always fish, both places. And the cohos were on the west side of the river. When the cohos run, or when a chum dropped down, the cohos would move over onto the east bank. But as soon as another boat would come through, the cohos would go back onto the west bank, which we never could figure that out. And we run two test wheels because that's what I was saying was going on, and it proved out to be right in two different places. I don't know what else to add to that.
You know what, Mike? That was a great summary. I understood you perfectly that time. But that's, I just like hearing you talk. I haven't talked to you in a long time. So, yeah. Anyways, that's super good information. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
And I guess, Mike, I have a few more comments.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I wrote down what Mike said there. Just to let you guys know, what we're seeing at our sonar projects in the lower Yukon when we're counting salmon, we're also hearing from fishermen that are fishing that there's just no salmon in the river. And then when we do our aerial surveys and look at our upper Yukon assessment projects, our weirs and our sonars, we're also not seeing salmon. So it's a river-wide problem. It's across the whole Yukon drainage, which is why we're thinking this is more of a marine problem that's going on. We are studying the juveniles in the ocean, and we're looking into how they're being impacted by water temperature, what they're eating, and we'll have more to share next year when we talk to your AC. We have marine biologists right now that are doing a big survey across the North Pacific Ocean to learn about where salmon go in the wintertime in the ocean. But getting back to the Kantishna drainage and some of the concerns we've heard from you guys over the years, the last 2 years in particular. So the 4-inch mesh size, normally you guys are open with 7.5-inch or smaller mesh filaments 7 days a week, and you need a subsistence salmon permit. But talking to the Collins sisters, it sounds like correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're fishing in the lake proper, you're not catching very many salmon, and they're really rare. But yet you're catching lots of non-salmon. And so
that's
if,
correct.
Okay. And so if that's the case, we do know as a department, we've worked with the trimmers in the past with the cestus wheels, and we really appreciate their cooperation, helping us over the years. We understand that the salmon are more in the river systems. We don't think that salmon are spawning in the lake or really using that lake very much. And so we kind of have two things that we're looking into management-wise is one, for people fishing in the lake proper at Lake Minchumina, I think what we can do this year as a permit condition, we can write it on the regulation summary. We have the ability to do this. If we can say if you're fishing in the lake proper at Lake Minchumina that you would not be required to have a subsistence salmon fishing permit. But if you were fishing in any of the outlets or any of the other rivers or lakes in the Kantishna River drainage, then you would need to have that subsistence salmon fishing permit with you.
That would be great. Thanks.
I think that would really help you guys. The intention of that subsistence salmon permit, there's harvest limits for salmon. It's based on salmon management. It's not based on non-salmon fishing. But because, in general, for fisheries, we manage as a drainage. That's why Lake Minchumina is wrapped into that permit. The second thing we're looking into, it's going to take some time, and it's not guaranteed at this point for this coming season, is I'm working with Dina, and we're working with our boss, Chuck, who is also on the line, and we're reviewing our current regulations to see if it's possible to allow a larger mesh size than 4-inch gill nets in Lake Minchumina for the purpose of non-salmon fishing. Compared to the rest of the Kantishna River drainage where the salmon swim, we would need to maintain that 4-inch or smaller mesh protection for the salmon. So that's one thing we're looking at. I think it would help you guys. The other option that Tina mentioned is, we're kind of bound by what we can do in regulation. And if you guys disagree with the regulation for your area, you can submit a Board of Fisheries proposal. And the call for proposals right now is open until April 11th. And so your AC could get creative and make something that works better for you. And you're welcome to reach out to Dean and I. We can explain what the current regulations are and try to help you craft a proposal and get that submitted.
Okay, that sounds great.
But I guess with the three things, or I guess the two things that we proposed, would that help you in the lake itself for Lake Minchumina? And then would that, satisfy everyone else on the AC if we left? We have to leave the salmon restrictions and the salmon permit requirements for the rest of the drainage.
It works for us if we are almost exclusively going after local fish.
It sounds good to me, too.
All right. Oh, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that's a super... Good job, Christy. That's a nice bridge to, I think, a big concern that was raised. So thank you. I guess before we move on to the next part, is there any more comments on that area of the meeting? Because I think we'll move on to the next part, if not. Okay, go ahead, Nate.
Hey, Mike, just a reminder, I think you might want to ask for unanimous consent on that being a recommendation from our committee to ADF&G, or ask if there's objections.
I guess is there any objections, or is that we'd like to unanimously confirm or, I don't know, that Chris, you know, that's a great idea. Do we have any objections? All right. Yeah, thanks, Nate. So, oh, it's a whole meeting thing. All right. Well, so far, I think we all got a common goal, and I think things are moving forward. So, moving forward, I guess, the next thing would be looking at old business, which I looked at our notes, and it was just pretty much electing the kind of the board members. And then, after old business, our new business is, boy, discussing that size of chickens, which I believe we just did. Do we want to discuss our Board of Fisheries call for proposals, anything that's coming on? Okay, and then the third part is, do we need to discuss any other fisheries or wildlife businesses needed? Is there something that, I know we had a little bit of discussion about moose in the past. Is there anything that you'd like, anybody would like to bring up about wildlife, especially since Tony's on board?
Mike, this is Kyle from Board Support. And I just wanted to clarify those agenda items there that you just went through. So all of the members should have received, and if anyone didn't receive any of the attachments, please let me know. I'd be happy to make sure to get those out to folks. So that Board of Fisheries call for proposals, as I think both Christy and Dina pointed out, those proposals will be due on April 11th, and those are going to be for the meeting cycle next year that will include the Yukon drainage system. And so I would definitely recommend that if there are proposals that are mulling around in anyone's mind on the advisory committee that you would like to, you know, think about formally submitting on behalf of your advisory committee, that you just bear in mind that April 11th deadline. I know that Christy and Dina are both probably your best resources for some of the language that would need to be there. I'm also really happy to help work with you all. I don't have as much expertise other than on kind of the process. I did send a fillable Word document to all of you that is sort of, it's the format for how to submit those proposals if it's your first time doing it. Proposals can also be submitted by individuals. They don't have to be submitted or by, you know, a group of individuals or it doesn't have to be the advisory committee. But if it were to happen with sort of the stamp of approval from your AC, that would need to happen during a proper...
That made any sense when I was talking. I
at which there's a quorum present.
All right, Kyle. I guess, you know, from what I understand, you know, the two things that Chris, you brought up, you know, the permit, you know, condition being at the lake and then larger than 4-inch shipment tuna for non-salmon, I mean, that sounds like a super reasonable thing. Is there anything that we don't need to, in your opinion, I guess, or anybody's opinion, do we need to submit something along those lines, or we just kind of run along with what Christy's working on and call it good, or what's kind of everyone's feeling on it, I guess?
Well, I can speak to a little bit of that just sort of seeing how other advisory committees kind of will put their recommendations forward. I mean, I certainly think that you're right that everyone in this call seems to be on the same page and fully understanding what Christy had outlined. Often an advisory committee might, the chair might ask for a motion to be made. So there would be sort of a formal action recorded in the minutes. And the motion could be as simple as, a motion to ask the department to put forth those recommendations that Christy outlined. It doesn't need to be overly complicated, but something that's reflected in those meeting minutes, that can be one place that's a really helpful way to get that forward. There's really several different ways to skin this cat, I guess. So, that's all I wanted to say for that. And I also just wanted to, you mentioned the discussion of the officer elections from old business. So as I might have mentioned before, you called this meeting to order. The meeting you all held back in the end of 2021 was one of my first advisory committee meetings. I wasn't as on the ball with like the membership for your committee. So now that I've kind of gotten a little bit more of the lay of the land, I do recognize that the Lake Minchumina Advisory Committee, although you do have 5 members that are properly voted in, I've got your information, and you have your officers elected. You do have 4 vacancies and 2 alternates that have not been appointed. The vacancies can't be filled without sort of noticing an elections meeting, so we wouldn't be able to fill those vacancies today. Those would need to be done during an elections meeting that was noticed with 14 days ahead of time. But the alternates are something that might be helpful. I noticed that I don't have any records of your advisory committee appointing alternates, and it's as simple as a quorum of your committee like you have here today saying we'd like to appoint up to 2 alternates that could stand in if there were absentees. So that is a helpful way often to reach quorum when maybe some members might be unavailable. So I know you've got a lot of community members that seems like are really interested in being involved in this committee, so it might be pretty easy to grab a few alternates out of the guests on the call today. Just, I wanted to point those 2 things out. Otherwise, you're doing a great job. I will butt out and leave it to any other business that you all would like to discuss.
No, that's super, Kyle. Yeah, thanks for the coaching once more. So just officially, I guess, to kind of what I think is kind of the main purpose of the meeting, if we can just kind of, I guess, yay, nay, or I guess I would move that we officially unanimously agree for Christy's 2 proposals that she's putting in for fishing at the lake, a permit at the lake, a permit condition, of not targeting salmon, and then larger than 4-inch at Minchumina for non-salmon that she was working on with Chuck and Deanna and Christy. So, go ahead, Nate.
Just a point of order question. I hate to be the point of order guy, but at the board of game, it's not possible for the chair to make the motion. Is that generally, I mean, I know we're not bound by Robert's rules, but what do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, so thank you, Nate. There always needs to be a point of order person. So I appreciate it. And to the best of our ability, we do try to follow Robert's Rules of Order. I will send a copy of one of these little short cheat sheets out to you, Mike, as well as other members, just so you have it if it's helpful. I'll also try and send you a digital version. But yeah, typically, with a few exceptions, the chair does not make a motion, but you can ask for a motion to be made. Then one of the other members on the call would make the motion. The chair would ask for a second. Once the motion has been made and seconded, then the chair would call for discussion on that motion if there is any further discussion. And once the discussion has concluded, that's when you would call the question, which can often be done as asking for unanimous consent if there is no opposition voiced during the discussion. But oftentimes it's done with a roll call style vote, so you call the question, and then that way the secretary logging the meeting minutes would be able to have a clear check off each box: the motion was made by so and so, seconded by so and so. The question was called, and this was the outcome. That is the sort of most above board way I can describe it, I guess.
No, I appreciate that, Kyle. Thank you. I'm pretty sure from now on the rest of the time. Okay, go ahead.
Well, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. There's a delay. I'm prepared to make the motion to keep things moving if you wish. So.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, somebody wants to make a motion? Call the motion?
Yes, I move to request ADF&D to use their discretionary authority to address both the permit requirements and net size requirements as outlined by discussion during this meeting. That's it.
You are. Great, thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right, looks like we got a second and a third. Awesome. All right, well, I'd like to call for a discussion. Would you like to have a discussion over this? I think it looks like it appears to be a unanimous consent. If going forward, I'd like to point out that it's unanimous. Unless anybody has another thought, we'll move forward. All right, thanks, Kyle. You know what? Next time we visit, when I see Mike again, we're just going to have a really formal meeting, Mike. It's going to be great. Anyways, all right. So, not really funny. Let's see. Moving on. Looking at old business, we had some people with our that were voted in. So thanks for everybody doing that. I guess we're looking for some more. We have some positions that are open. Seeing as Mark and Beverly and St. Mary and Dick are here, I see four of them right away. So if you guys would like to join, I would just propose to have you guys be part of the official group. Does anybody else want to recommend anybody, or just should we open it up for, or actually, would anybody like to put anybody up for nomination?
And Mike, to clarify, if I was a little unclear, so during today's meeting, the four members present certainly can appoint two alternates for this advisory committee. That one, there can be a call for nominations. As the chair, you can also say, I would like to appoint so-and-so and so-and-so. So you can have two alternates that you could appoint today. There are also four vacancies that would have to be filled during a subsequent meeting, an elections meeting that was noticed with 14 days ahead of time.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. Thanks for clarifying that. I guess right away, would anybody like to speak up and nominate two alternatives?
I'd like to nominate Julie.
Oh, excellent.
I have a suggestion, but I'm going to wait until I hear other board members or committee members with their desires.
I'd like to nominate Mark Miller.
All right. I think that's pretty good. We got two right off the bat. I guess it would do a little little call to let's see. Ooh, do we have a second? How does it? Do we have anybody that? I guess first of all, ask Julie would be interested. Would that be okay, Julie?
Yeah, as an alternate.
Great. And then how about Mark? Would that be all right with you, Mark?
Yep, it's okay with me.
Perfect. Yeah, go ahead, Nate.
Mark, I would second the nomination for both of them just to keep the record clean.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, right. I think we have to second nominations.
There you go. All right, Nate. Oh, man. Okay. Any discussion? All right. I'd like to, anybody that we'd just unanimously appoint the two alternatives, Julie and Mark. So welcome aboard. And what we'll do is put on for the agenda for next time is look at adding more committee members and the vacancies, the four vacancy slots that we have. All right. Ooh, let's see. Okay, and I guess the next part, okay, so we'll go on to new business. We're on now section 13. I believe we already discussed net size restrictions, which is on the agenda right now. Does anybody like to say anything towards the Board of Fisheries call for proposals? Okay, and the third item of the new business would be other fisheries and wildlife businesses needed. Does anybody have any discussion in that regard to that?
Mike, this is Nate again. There's a Board of Game meeting coming up March 4th through 12th. It's a statewide meeting, so the topics are discussed at statewide applicability. It's not for local issues, but it may be prudent that we, at least some of our committee members or all of us, review those proposals to see if anything is outstanding that might affect this area. The meeting's coming up close, but I know the board will accept anything as an RSC during the meeting, any thoughts or concerns they have it still has the same weight coming from the AC, so it's just, they just get it dumped in their laps during the meeting. But I would be willing to be one member to at least look for anything that might affect us. And I guess we would need to, I'd have to have clarification myself on the correct process of legitimizing any of our points, whether we'd have to do it through a subcommittee or we can have a meeting of a quorum informally. I'm not sure. Kyle would have to clarify that.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that to the attention, Nate. I know I had mentioned that during the last meeting back in December. It didn't sound like, at least at that time, that the members in the meeting weren't any proposals taken up. But you're right, comments are accepted as record copies at RCs up until the proposal that's being commented on is under deliberation. At that point, it's a little bit too late, I guess. Because that means that we accept those comments, those written comments, all the way up throughout the meeting. The deadline has passed for what we call those on-time comments. That was last Friday. We always request those 2 weeks before the meeting starts. That gives us time to, for written comments at least, to compile those and get those printed in front of the, and so the Board of Game members have those in front of them. I do have a helpful document that I think I have shared. If not, I'll make sure I send it out to all of you currently. Oops, and a little bit of background noise here. Bruce, I'm going to go ahead and mute you on my end. I think I'm getting some feedback from your speaker. So the Board of Game proposals that are going to be taken up at that statewide meeting beginning next Friday, even without written comments submitted on behalf of your advisory committee, we would still very much welcome a representative from your advisory committee to provide provide oral testimony. That can be done in person or over the phone. The board support has kind of changed the way we're doing things kind of throughout this winter, but we've listened to the requests from members of the public and advisory committee members to be able to provide their testimony over the phone. So that's an option. So if today, well, you have a quorum present in this meeting, if you wanted to sort of select one of your members to represent your advisory committee, that would be a great way to do it. Typically, it's not recommended that you would have an informal meeting to talk about your recommendations on proposals. Advisory committees are all bound by the Open Meetings Act, which does, ask that any business that you're taking up be properly noticed. That being, I post that online public meeting notice, and so this meeting today would probably be the better time to talk about proposals. And I realize it's kind of springing it on folks if they haven't looked at them or don't have them in front of you. I'm also happy. You have a pretty small advisory committee, so I think there might be a workaround with the Open Meetings Act. As long as there's less than three of you talking about it, then you're not violating the Open Meetings Act, but it's also not really representing your advisory committee fully. So another suggestion could be to have a representative from your advisory committee testify and state that some of the comments shared are those comments of the community of Lake Minchumina. That might be a reasonable way to kind of, not ideal to kind of do things last minute, I guess, but trying to keep things without there being any way to say, hey, those actions or those recommendations they took didn't happen during a properly noticed meeting. Just trying to help ensure you avoid that. I'll kind of stop talking and realize I've rambled for a minute here. But you're right that the meeting does begin next Friday, and I think it would be great if whether your AC is able to submit written comments still or to have one of your members represent the AC to provide testimony, which can be done in person or over the phone, and you have to register online. So.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle. That's very helpful. As a committee, we haven't discussed any of these proposals that are coming up, and I don't think any of us that I'm aware of anyway so far are prepared to open a big discussion about any of them. I'm aware of a couple that I'd like to see our AC weigh in on, but it's not critical. But that being said, Kyle, is it possible for the AC to form a subcommittee and delegate the authority to speak for the AC, noting in the record that it's not, you know, that you would note that it wasn't a full vote, that this is the conclusion of the subcommittee on a certain topic?
I think that would be certainly doable. I know the preferred route is to have a meeting in which the proposals are taken up, take place, and then another meeting happen prior to those comments being submitted so that those comments can be reviewed by a quorum of the AC and given that sort of stamp of approval. On the minutes templates, there's a line that says, you know, when these minutes were approved, just like today, you all approved your minutes from your last meeting. I will also say, I mean, this is my first season doing this job, but I will say that although that's the best practice we hope for, that is not what we end up often getting. I'm currently scrambling right now on several different advisory committees that I'm helping them prepare draft minutes that will be presented to the board with the note on them saying that these minutes have not been approved by a full quorum of the AC. Those minutes or comments do still get read by the board members. I think the it's a balancing act between wanting to make sure we uphold the Open Meetings Act and every other aspect of the sort of procedures for doing this, but also seeing the real intent is to have community representation at these statewide board of, or at these large Board of Game meetings, especially the one that concerns regulations that are include the entire state. And so I think if you have a few proposals in mind right now that you know you wanted to share, this would be a great time, even just to have some comments generated during this properly noticed meeting. I'd be happy to pull those proposals up on screen or even read them out loud if that's what you'd like to happen right now.
Mike, if you don't mind, I guess I'll just reply directly. One of the proposals that's in my mind, I'm not going to bring up to the committee because it actually affects me directly. I don't want it to appear that I'm misusing the position on the AC to protect myself or benefit myself, so I'm not going to bring it up. I would bring it up if we had enough time in advance so that each AC member could review and come up with their own thoughts, but we're too short on time to meet the public notice requirement to have another meeting, and I don't want to disqualify or in any way give a bad impression of how our AC is conducting by advocating for something that will affect me directly. So that's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, that's definitely interesting. I think we'll certainly have a lot to talk about later on. Let's see. Does anybody have any questions on the is it possible to kind of scroll? That's a pretty long document, isn't it, the proposal there?
Yeah, so the document is 200 pages long, so it is probably not worth scrolling the whole thing, but I can kind of slowly scroll through the this index, and I'd also be happy to point out some of the proposals that I know other advisory committees in the interior have made comments on or have sort of been important to others, though I can't really say what's important to one community over another. It's interesting which things really jump out. They are organized by subjects, so these are all of the proposals that deal with definitions. If you'd like, there are over 100 proposals, so I'd be happy to read each of the proposal titles out loud if you wanted to. But I also understand that's a little bit more than everyone's ready for right now, so I'll just kind of slowly scrolling.
Yeah, that might be helpful as well. I guess this is all online too as well, Kyle. Is that correct?
Yes. So all of the proposals are online. In fact, here, let me stop the screen share. I'll show you the easier way to search on. So let me share my screen once more, and I'll share the same website I had or the browser I had open. If you were to say, starting from your Lake Mintrumina Advisory Committee's webpage, which I have updated to include these vacancies that we were just talking about, so you'd start by going to the Board of Games website, and then there's two places that are going to be helpful. If you were to go to the meeting information page here, that's how you access the different meetings. The only upcoming Board of Game meeting that's going to be on this meeting information page is the statewide regulations meeting. And that's where you will find the registration form. And this registration form is required if anyone is going to be attending in person. There's a liability waiver for COVID mitigation that needs to be completed for in-person attendance. And we've also asked that for anyone who's planning to testify remotely, that you do register no later than this coming Monday, so a week from, in 5 days. So if today your advisory committee does select a representative to represent UIC, I would ask that you, especially if you're planning on doing it by phone, that you either get my help or just directly go on to the website, fill out the registration form. Below the registration form is where you'll find the agenda, the roadmap, which is a really helpful document that kind of lays out the order in which staff presentations, public testimony, and proposals will be taken up. We also have the findings and comments from the department, as well as from the Department of Law. So there are findings and comments. We also have, we now have the customary and traditional use, at least for one area. Maybe that's only on a few of the proposals from assistants. And then under the proposals, this actually is searchable by subject. These are the same subjects that are laid out in that index I was just showing you. The document I have open is a little different than what's here because these don't have page numbers. So I created one that I could print out and send to people. So I can send you the one with page numbers. It's very helpful. But when you click on these show proposals, it'll list which proposals are under each subject. So that can be a helpful way to kind of work your way through. So you can pull up individual proposals here. There are a few recent additions to this list, including a board-generated proposal 271 that is only came out just a few weeks ago, and I might bring that one up on screen here in a moment because that one is one that many ACs have had concerns with. And then there were also two proposals that were deferred from the last Board of Game meeting that dealt with Central and Southwest Region regulations that was held in Wasilla last month. So there are three proposals, one of which that restricts prohibits trapping within 50 yards of certain public use trails. And that's also one that's generated a lot of interest. So this would be my recommendation on where to look over the proposals and any other materials. There are going to be kind of up for discussion during that Board of Game meeting that starts next Friday. And again, that's by from the Board of Games website, going to the meeting information tab and then selecting the statewide regulations meeting. You can also find the proposals by clicking on the proposal link here on the main Board of Games website.
Yeah, that's super informative, Kyle. Yeah, thank you. is there any other, other fisheries and wildlife businesses needed? Do we need, to discuss anything while we're all together? All right, round number 14. As a group, we like to, select representatives for the board meeting for the March 4th through the 12th, which is coming up pretty soon. Do we have any representatives that would, or I guess I'm kind of unfamiliar with this as well. So how does this work as far as travel and taking care of getting our people over to participate in the meeting, Kyle?
Yeah, so ideally, if your representative for your AC was going to be requesting travel support to this meeting, I would have been able to start that process a little earlier than now. I can check with our travel admins in Juneau to see if it's not too late to make that work. Because of the timing, I would recommend taking advantage of that remote testimony option that I just talked about, and that might be a more sure bet that it's going to work, and because that way we can get whichever representative your AC selects, and it'll be one of the five members. Often it's the chair, but it doesn't have to be, who would represent your AC's recommendations on any, either all or any proposals, or if there are comments outside of the, that aren't necessarily pertaining to specific proposals, but that you feel are worth merit for sure. Typically, the board likes to see comments, recommendations stick to the proposals that are on the table. As far as travel goes, I don't believe any of the members of the Lake Minchumina AC, we currently have like a vendor number for, it's just a matter of getting like a W-4 form, like a tax form filled out so that we can have you, so that we're able to provide a reimbursement for you if you are paying for your own travel. Our reimbursements are limited to a cost or a fair quote that we can generate. So the state kind of has its own governing rules on what the most direct route of transportation would be. So we'll have a fixed amount that we would be able to reimburse. We also typically would provide lodging at the venue, so in Fairbanks and the Pikes Waterfront Lodge. But like I said, I typically like to get that process started a little bit sooner than 1 week before the meeting is going to start. I can't promise that I can make that work if you decide you want to send someone in person. I can do my very best, but I'd have to really get moving on it this afternoon. But if the representative wanted to provide the testimony remotely, that is a surefire bet.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. I guess we can, as we'll look into getting a W-2 form filled out for our future delegates who attend meetings, for sure, for next time. And yeah, thanks again for being patient, Kyle. We're kind of getting our feet under to how this whole thing runs, and even how to run a meeting. So I'm going to be absent the month of March. Is there somebody else who would, or is anybody like to be nominated? Is anybody else interested in attending the meeting and for our AC meeting, our AC group? Alright. Okay. Well, so we will use the option of attending remotely if we need to, Kyle. I think there is just a lot of information to digest, I think, in as far as just jumping up and going next week. Might be a little bit much, so we'll definitely use the call-in if we needed something comes up.
Just as a reminder, if you are going to have someone represent your AC with remote testimony, we do have an advanced registration deadline for remote testimony. So that's Monday. So that registration form I just showed you where to find on the meeting information page, that would need to be filled out by Monday for remote testimony. If for some reason this doesn't happen until after Monday, I'll see what I can do to make arrangements. I just can't guarantee that we'd be able to make that work if you don't sort of indicate that you're going to be representing the AC with remote testimony.
Okay. All right.
Monday.
No, that sounds good, Kyle. Would anybody be interested in taking that spot as remote testimony in our group here? Anyone? Not a lot of crickets in the wintertime. Sorry. All right. So,
you don't feel bad? I think this happens at almost every ACE meeting.
Well, I don't feel bad. I just, we're figuring this out. So I guess, let's see. Let's get a next meeting date. And Kyle, or somebody else knows, as my understanding is basically about once a year, if that's about right, and do you want to shoot for the same time frame again, or do we feel like we'd like to get some things squared away before next time? I mean, I think we're got a little bit of a learning curve, but I think we, just stay on top of issues. Do we have a projected date out, or does anybody have any recommendations?
I can answer the question you just raised about sort of the frequency of meetings. Often some of the off-the-road system smaller ACs do meet only once annually. There has been some discussion in some of the other ACs that I've been working with in the interior just because of how much things have changed over the last 2 years with the pandemic. Some ACs haven't met for 2 full years until this winter. But there has been a lot of discussion of maybe more regular meetings because of the being able to use Zoom or teleconferencing. But you're under no requirement to meet more than once annually. Once or twice is usually what most ACs do. And just as far as like the longer term cycle, so this current statewide regulations board of game meeting would have issues that affect your AC or the interior, as will the Board of Fisheries meeting cycle for next year that will include both the Yukon, the Arctic Yukon, Kuskokwim region, as well as some statewide finfish or salmon regulations. But the interior and Arctic region won't come up again for the Board of Game until, I believe, 2023, 2024. So if your advisory committee isn't looking to submit a proposal to the Board of Fisheries before that April 11th deadline this spring, I don't see there being any pressing matters that your AC would need to take up before maybe be worth looking at the proposals and making comments on them for the Board of Fisheries next year before those meetings begin. So if you want to either set a tentative meeting date or kind of leave that to be determined, that's certainly allowable. And I just want to point one other thing out about the Board of Game meeting that's beginning next week. The entire meeting will be streamed online for the public, so you don't need to be in Fairbanks to see what's happening during the meeting. And everything I just shared about the remote testimony sign-up, that all is also the same for the public or individuals or other organizations. So for any of the guests who are on the call, if you would like to tune in to the Board of Game meeting or submit comments, written comments as record copies, or provide oral testimony remotely or in person, you are welcome to. It would be that same meeting information page that I just shared.
All right. Yeah, thank you very much, Kyle. Well, looking forward, I don't see anything super pressing. I think we, I would propose, due to, the difficulty of traveling, across the lake during the winter, and kind of doing something along the lines we did this year, I think we'd be a little more prepared as far as the dates and stuff outlined beforehand. But if we shoot it for November 17th, which is a Thursday at 1 p.m., does that sound okay? I mean, we can always have meetings earlier, but I just think to kind of keep it the same cadence as we did this year. If that sounds, if somebody would like to, nominate that, propose it, second it, whatever you say. If somebody else has a suggestion, please speak up.
Hi, this is Bruce. That sounds good to me.
Thanks, Bruce. I should say, if everybody likes the idea, please say something. Or something. Anyway, we'll run with that. November 17th is what it is at 1 p.m. And, if we decide to have something else earlier or something else comes up, we'll definitely, get together again. But, thanks for, coming on, Julie and Mark. And, we'll recruit the other vacancies. And I think you guys know who you are. So, all right. Thank you very much. Is there anything else? So I guess do I call for a motion to adjourn? Do I have a second?
That's exactly right.
Mr. Chair, I move to adjourn.
Mr. Chair, all right. Second.
All right, thank you. I guess we'll just do unanimous consent.
that's pretty easy to do, unless somebody else wants to talk some more.
You don't actually need it for adjournment. That's one of the nice things with Robert's rules. You just need a motion.
All right. Okay, guys. Well, thanks again for joining in. And tune in next time, November 17th. Thanks, guys.
Good job, Mike.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank
and,
you.
I just wanted to say for Julie and Mark, if you're still – I know Julie, I can still see you here in the car. I think Mark is as well. I did just drop in the chat earlier. There's a link to the that same new member form that I shared with members before. But if it's easier maybe to fill it out online than to try and scan it and send it back in. I can also send you a paper copy if that's better. But if you wouldn't mind filling that out, that way I've got your contact info and I can get you kind of officially on the roster as alternates for this advisory committee.
I'd like a paper copy if you could mail that.
Certainly, yeah. I'll put one in the mail. I think last time I mailed things, I just sent them to the library. Will that work?
Sure, yeah.
And, Julie, what's your last name?
Collins. C-O-L-L-I-N-S.
Julie Collins. Perfect. Thank you so much. I will get that sent out.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks again, guys. We'll see you next time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.